Continues on with Senate Bill 5545, the public hearing portion. We got some questions and answers. Susan Jordan represents Legislative Fiscal Office. Linda Shar is our Subcommittee Assistant. Maybe we could have the list of questions that came forward as of yesterday, or as of the 12th, I guess. Mike?
Mr. Chair, Mike March, with the Department of Transportation, here to go through the questions from the last couple of days' worth. We have a question that pended from the March 12th discussion, which related to funding and how that relates to the Area Commissions on Transportation. It's the number one question in your packet, and it shows the annual budget estimate of $260,000 on an 80%, 20% federal-state match, or roughly 2% of the region highway planning budget as the amount for Area Commissions on Transportation. We can get more into that if the members would like. The other questions relate to information out of our discussion at the end of last week on March 30th. Some of these questions were pending from the other day. Then we get into the hearing from yesterday at the end of the information here. The first one was relating to training and what is the cost differential between the types of training. What we show are the calendar year 2000 actuals for the different types of training from engineering through DMV through management training. In each one of the categories, number of employees, number of class hours, and the average cost per employee. The footnotes are noted there in terms of covering consultant costs and training costs.
That's on page 2, Representative Johnson, the questions and answers.
Thank you.
I want to make sure you're on the ball.
The second question is dealing with the policy for disposal of dirt and condemnation of property for projects around that. As indicated in the answer, the thrust of it is we try to get a balance between materials excavated and materials that are used for fill as much as possible. And right-of-way can be acquired, but our goal is to try to get that as balanced as possible. The third question relates to the list of project contract overruns granted by the Oregon Transportation Commission and includes a percentage over under original authorization with the bottom line listed under each one of the years, 98 through 2000. And in 98, it showed under 1.2%, in 99, under 2%, and in 2000, under 0.1% as the summary of OTC activity regarding those.
And these are on completed projects, Mike?
Yes, contract overruns in the period. I think the actual answer was how many of them were contract overruns in that year. So it may not be that the project is actually completed, but what was the number of overruns in that year?
Oh, I see. So there's a number of overruns and a number of underruns.
Correct. Let's see. The fourth question was ODOT and applying for waivers from the Federal Highway Administration. Kind of a couple summary comments here. First of all, there's one standard waiver request for bridge that is an ongoing piece for us in Oregon. The Code of Federal Regulations requires that 15% of the state's funds related to this go for local off-system bridges. And we've found that that 15% doesn't work in Oregon with our current system. Usually we're focusing on about 6% as off-system, so that's an ongoing waiver. We also do some waivers on a project-by-project basis, and from January to December of 2000, there were 35 federal aid projects that had approved design exceptions. Number five was how many signage standard waivers have been requested from FHWA, and ODOT has not requested any signage waivers from FHWA. As the answer gets into, there are requirements for signage, and some of them vary. We do have some flexibility within the department for determination, and FHA has turned down any of the requests that required us to go in for a waiver on a mandatory condition. What is Central Services' vacancy rate? Of the 54 positions listed as vacant in Central Services, 15 are scheduled for elimination or otherwise used. The remainder are either in recruitment or pending internal decisions. There are positions that are vacant in there that are, as it says, pending other decisions within the agency. Providing a copy of Central Services' budget reduction recommendations given to the Transportation Commission in the summer of 2000. The next page shows the response to the commission chair's request for an additional 15% reduction, what would happen with the impact, I should say, of an additional 15% reduction beyond what had come out of the reductions in the 9901 biennium. And that next page talks about those impacts on systems, on response times, and those other kinds of impacts within the branches of central services. The bottom line for that discussion is that the reductions in the 9901 biennium were about $10.7 million. An additional $6.1 million reduction was implemented in 0103. That was the amount determined by the commission as being appropriate for the amount of reduction. They did not take more than that, but that was a significant reduction already. Mr. Chair, the next series of questions are from yesterday, and the first one there was relating to a summary of the maintenance surveys, and in your packet at the tail end of it, there's a series of attachments. The first one is attachment A, and in that is a survey, a copy of the survey that's used in the maintenance area that shows the responses and the options for citizens to use when they're responding back on that survey. I think Senator Yee wanted to see how that actually laid out. The second question related to providing an example as to why planning looks like top-down processes rather than a sequential effort. A couple of answers there. The next attachment in a few pages looks like this, and we think gives a little bit better portrayal of lines going both ways. Apologies for not having that number, but it's about three pages from the back. And that shows the flow of work going more both ways than the summary chart we used the other day. Also, the law does state that the primary duty of the Oregon Transportation Commission is to develop and maintain a straight state transportation policy and a comprehensive long-range plan that is also multimodal in terms of the system. In order to have that work, there does need to be some top-down guidance in terms of criteria. But the actual response to that then and how we deal with projects and how we work through the issues of applying it to get consistency, to deal with problems, is where this chart comes into play and the concerns from locals do come forward. If there's a question on that, we can take it now or later.
Mike, in that regard, do local governments, we have had some concern expressed here, but do local governments feel that there is some degree of heightened sense of STIP programs for their local concerns?
Mr. Chair, that's certainly the goal of the Area Commissions on Transportation process and the fact that they were established here a few years ago in order to have that better focus point for that local information coming forward rather than the more laissez-faire or less structured approach. So I hate to answer for the local governments, but my belief would be that they would be more happy with the way the STIP process works now than 5 years ago.
Thank you.
The third question was how much would we save if we had an annual review or a biennial review instead of an annual review of the Oregon Transportation Plan? The straight numbers are listed here. As we mentioned yesterday, the overview on the subject is we're trying to make sure the commission is advised of information regarding implementation of the Oregon Transportation Plan, and that by doing this on an annual basis, they're advised in time to make adjustment and understand what the impacts are. However, if the determination was made to eliminate it, at the cost of doing it on an annual basis is about $10,000. 80% of that is federal funds, which means the state dollars would be approximately $2,000. The last question, or the last on this page, was how are dispute resolution projects selected, and that's in attachment F of the material that was handed out on April 2nd for an explanation of the selection process, and we have to go into that more if the members would like. Question 5 was provide the timelines related to the local street network program, and this shows when it started coming out of the session, the policy guidelines and criteria being developed with public input, the OTC acting on that public input and developing the criteria officially. Then the project applications due back in May of 2000. The application for the bond process coming through OTC, the actual bonding taking place in October of 2000, OTC approving the first and second round, and then projects being implemented. And the last piece was, are any funds recovered through the COMET programs? And again, the attachments, I believe it's D, the last one, last page of the packet shows the damage to structure claims. The last one is 1.5 million for 2,000 of claims and expected receipts regarding damage to structure, giving some perspective of when we're getting those recoveries.
Representative Johnson?
I was sort of waiting for him to take a breath so I could ask whether or not we can, before we go into work session, can ask any other questions not related to this accumulation of material that they've brought.
I think that's probably fine. I would like to just clarify that attachment D on comment program, the five-year total, that's actual recoveries. Is that what those are in both those cases, Mike? Are those just...
Those are the claims that were opened. As I understand it, it would not be the final recovery in the most recent year, like 2000. So it is the amount that's actually being collected.
$3,769,000 is collected on two.
In the most recent year, as well as the old ones.
Okay.
Although I think I would suggest that in the year 2000, we probably have some claims that are still pending that we may be able to recover more. But that's the amount that was actually received in 2000.
Yeah, it would appear that there's money being collected. I'm just trying to. Five-year total off of 91 through 95, total of $3,769,000, and then the five-year total 212 2000 is $5,200,000. Do we know the actual amount of damages that are involved in those? What the total amount of the claims of damages were that we're recovering $5.2 million?
We can get that. Claims to damage ratio is what the chair is asking for.
Yes, claims to damage ratio. And are they the ones that assess the damage? They don't assess the damage.
You're asking how the amount is determined?
Well, yes. What does that have to do with the Comet crew?
The maintenance crew makes an estimate of the damage that's caused to the infrastructure by the accident that Comet is cleaning up. So if a guardrail or a barricade or a section of shoulder is significantly damaged for one reason or another, that estimate is made by maintenance of what it will cost to repair it and on site there, and then they come back and recover against the insurance, usually, to receive the funds back.
Thank you. Representative Johnson is now recognized.
Thank you. In preparation for beginning the work session, I've gone back and just tried to refresh myself with some questions. And there's stuff that I just don't understand, Mike, that maybe you can help me with. Again, I'm looking at this document in the context of Ways and Means for the first time, so I'm leaving open the door that I might have gotten something hideously wrong. In highway special programs, it looks to me as though the proposed budget is decreasing, and yet there's a huge increase in FTE, like 300 and some FTE. How's that work?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, as we go through these questions, I'll have an answer off the top on some of them, some I may not. But on this one, we did make a significant change in this last budget go-around. In 99, we made came in with a program budget. That program budget made an estimate about how many FTE are involved in each one of the highway areas. And as the Chair and Representative Johnson may recall, we had two, or actually three when you count reimbursables, accounts within highway. We went to having 10. And actually putting those into an estimate of how many FTE are involved was a challenge, because there hadn't been an effort made in the past to determine how many engineers are, what percentage of their time are actually going to modernization, preservation, et cetera. If they're working in a team, they hadn't split them out before. Same kind of thing within a lot of areas of the department. So estimates were made in the 99 session about what that split should be. We came forward, had an FTE count, and it was approved in the 99 session. Then it said in House Bill 2478, come back in the interim to the emergency board and make adjustments as necessary. if there are funding issues, you need to move more than 5%, which we did. And then there's also an opportunity to come back and adjust on the basis of whether our FTE counts were correct or not, or how far off we were in terms of the shifts of FTE from where we actually thought they were at the time in 99 as compared to how it actually came out after implementing. So that change is not a change in program, i.e. a change in priorities moving to special programs. Is a recognition that that's actually where the work is being done.
Go ahead.
I got four questions,
please,
one's down.
Please proceed.
In highway operations, again, there's a big staff increase. It looks like 147 positions in highway.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, same issue, that it was an estimate made in 99 of approximately what we thought would be the amount of FTE involved, but we had not actually lived with a limitation for operations in 99. After living with it and recognizing how much is actually involved there, that's the amount that is involved with operations.
Okay. Just in terms of understanding the highway side of this, what's a senior public policy analyst do?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, it depends on the program. If you're looking at, I think that's a working title. If you have the actual classification there, I could either give you a more direct answer or look it up for you.
What I'm driving at is I'm trying to get a sense of how throughout the agency, and I keep going back again to my old time at ODOT, transportation development, then the branch, now division, was always marked as the planning part of the operation. And yet there seems to be analysis and planning happening all over. And I'm trying to get a handle on how that all fits together. I understand that there has to be some planning functions, but I'm curious about what policy analysts for highways are doing and how that differs from the kind of more theoretical planning work that's occurring in TDD. Help me.
Okay, so the class you're talking about is one that's located in the highway division, is what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
A senior public policy analyst position. There is a class called principal contributor, which includes a working title that deals with public policy analyst. I suspect that's the one you're talking about. Outside of TDB, the areas that would have that kind of classification would include the Highway Finance Office. There's an element of highway that deals with funds and grants administration, in essence, looking at how we get monies from the federal government, how we apply those internally within the department, analyzing whether a certain mix of those federal funds and state funds can be best applied. It relates back to funds to a fund exchange concept of trying to make sure we're working well with the local governments when that program is available, to look at how we use the federal money, how we deal with the local monies. That's one place. Another where analysts under that title work is in the central services area, where we have people doing econometric analysis, looking at both revenue forecasting as well as cash flow issues. That kind of analysis could be under that classification. Trying to think of others that might occur there outside of TDD.
We don't need to go through every one of them. I can certainly understand doing econometric forecasting. I mean, that seems to be a very highly defined, here's the problem, you do some work on it, and there's a result. What I'm trying to get my arms around is how much planning is actually going on. And believe me, by asking this, I'm not disparaging planning. A $2 billion agency ought to have a plan. I'm just trying to get a sense, though, of where all these pockets of planning are. And who really is how the planning happens? Is there some repository for the plan, and then the plan gets transmitted to the rest of the agency, and then there's the expectation of the execution?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, what I'm thinking is that maybe it'd be useful to show you some of the planning delivery leadership function and how that planning process works, and maybe an additional piece that would be useful is to come back with sort of a flow chart or a way to kind of tie that together about how the planning process works through, if that would deal with the representative's question.
That would be helpful. Last but not least, I'm sitting in this very room a matter of a couple of weeks ago under the gavel of Senator Klarna. We were meeting with the Capital Planning Commission and having a little chat with them about what role they played in planning for state building. This is, and I wasn't particularly pleased with what they told me, and they came up and shared additional information. And during the course of them sharing additional information, we touched on one of my old stomping grounds, the Mill Creek Building. And I asked them what role they had had in helping guide ODOT towards picking Mill Creek versus picking another building that I knew had been offered at a lesser cost, but it appeared more opulent. And so we had a lot of discussion about that. That caused me to think about the Mill Creek Building in terms of how troubled that building seems to be. That's sort of the broad question, is how long do you stay in a building that seems to have as much trouble as poor old Mill Creek does? And secondly, how are you charging the tenants inside Mill Creek right now? Do they have an expectation that occupancy in that building is at a fixed amount? Or, as it was when I was there, are the poor old tenants continuing to pay as it slides into the creek on one side and the railroad right away on the other side? I have no bias about that building, I want you to understand.
I understand. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, let me start at the question and see if I can focus it on a couple different areas. The first is the condition of the building. There is a meter in several spots, or at least a couple spots that I'm aware of, where there are cracks, and there is a meter in place to say, is this separation increasing? And I'm
giving, like, are people going to drop through it at some point?
We're not talking about a hole like this. We're talking about fractions.
Okay.
But that's being tracked on an ongoing basis to make sure it doesn't result in safety issues around the dropping of the building towards the creek. And as of now, at least as of last time I had any comment on it a couple weeks ago, there wasn't an enlargement of that gap. But at the same time, I'm not saying we don't agree that the building is not the best built building. And the fact is that we are looking at options within this budget, within the capital construction budget. I don't want to speak for the new director because we haven't gone through a process of planning and looking at this issue, but there is $1 within the capital construction budget for this agency that lists the ODOT building. And the plan there would be to come back in the interim, assuming revenues are available, to look at least what the options are. And this is speaking for myself only and not for the agency. I'd like to see those folks who are in that building moved in, because they are headquarters functions of the agency, moved into the headquarters building and moving functions that are not headquarters related out into other space that is either leased or built elsewhere. That building is nearing the end of its useful life. As the representative indicates, it wasn't the strongest building in the first place, but for the return on investment at the time, a lot of folks who were involved in the decision at that time, I'm sure it made the most sense for various reasons. But given where we are now, that's the overall plan that we would be looking at.
Do you guys own that building?
We do.
Because I see Ms. Howell sitting in the audience. With respect to Ms. Howell, when a train goes by that building, that is truly a life-altering experience to be in there.
I just want the chair to know if you're going on a tour of the building, I'm not going.
I don't need any more life-altering experiences.
For sure, let me be clear. It's not that much of a, it's not a safety issue, but as an investment, we do need to look at going elsewhere. The other point was the actual payment plan. We have a plan together of moving towards a rent structure for the building. There were issues around moving towards that plan in this budget process that made it difficult, and so we are shooting for that. Matter of fact, I think I answered an email just yesterday on the subject of whether we're going to commit to doing that, and assuming the director is okay with that, the plan would be to go for a rent process for people in that building. And again, just me speaking here, I'm thinking a rent process in the agency on a broader basis is also useful, but it's something we need to analyze and make sure we come back with a workable plan.
Two things. First, a comment for Mr. Marsh. When I was there, now going on 5 years ago, the department was analyzing a rent structure. It seems to me 5 years is a pretty long time. That is one observation. The second one is that this might be an opportunity, if the chair would indulge some kind of a budget note, to have an overall rent structure analyzed and implemented. and I'm making this up right now as I'm going along, so I don't have perhaps as firm a grip on it as I should, but some way to do the kind of analysis that you just spoke to so that the tenants in the structures would have a fixed idea of what they were paying for their rent, per se, and then some kind of ability to budget for capital maintenance and capital construction as appropriate later.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I hear what you're saying, and having come from my past job as facilities administrator for the state in DAS, I totally agree that rent structure is the way to go. The challenge is last biennium, I think, was the director and the OTC, as well as others, have significant concerns about moving to a rent payment, which requires payment and actual budgeting of those funds at a time when we are going through reduction. And it's difficult to have the monies come forward to make those payments when some entities are not paying for rent. And so in the meantime, that was the challenge. I think if the members wish to have a budget note, that's up to the members, but I can commit that we will review and we will have a rent plan put together in this interim. And, of course, like I say, I have not had a conversation with the OTC or the director about what's within that plan, so I hate to commit to it, but it's certainly going to be my place to recommend a rent structure this biennium.
I promise it's the last question.
Please proceed, Representative Johnson.
Are there some folks in Mill Creek not paying rent?
There are. They're not paying rent right now. They're paying an in lieu of rent payment done on the basis of estimated costs that occur.
Estimated costs that include cracks that are devouring St.
Bernard's. Or other shorter-term issues that may come up and require a shared payment by the occupants of the building.
Given the troubled nature of that building, that strikes me as pretty unpredictable. If I were managing a program there and I had no idea if and when half of the west wing of the building was going to fall off and my budget would be held captive to help pay for it, that strikes me as not giving them real good management tools.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, certainly if there was a major thing like that to occur, if the building, the wall fell off, they would not stay in that location. What we're talking about is small costs dealing with toilets and other things within the facility. But I think the point's well taken that our plan is to come up with a rental plan that allows for, in essence, a uniform rent kind of concept that allows for payment by occupants, and that's what we'd be shooting for.
Would you object if I explored with the chair a budget note that spoke to the development of that rental plan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I always like the idea of committing to and coming back and delivering and being held accountable. I can do that without a budget note. So
that's why you're so good at what you do.
Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Butler. Members, I apologize. I'm going to ask a question that I know I'm asking at the 11th hour. The Oregon Department of Transportation does a lot of work with contractors and vendors. And something hit me as you were speaking, talking about cash flow. I need assurance that the Department of Transportation is not paying additional interest or penalties on its payables. And I was wondering if it's possible, and if I'm at the 11th hour and it's not possible, I guess we'll work with that set. Our turnaround time on payables is not resulting in additional interest or penalties, that we could be taking those dollars and using elsewhere in the state's budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I can commit to you that we are making the department's mandatory timeline of 35 days on payables, and we're averaging at that or below. In terms of whether there is any penalty that's occurred over the last 2 years on an individual payment, I can't commit to that right here at the table, but I can say that it's been our commitment to make sure that we not only make the average and meet those requirements, that we, if we are going to be late on a payment, it's because there's an issue about the services provided. Whether it's an internal payment between state agencies or an external payment with an outside vendor, there have been episodes or experiences where something was not delivered in a qualified level of service that we were satisfied with, and which turned into a discussion or debate, and in a few cases, actual legal issues to make sure the state received the service that was expected. So I can say that we're making the payment average that's required by the state, and that in those cases where we're not making a payment timely, it's when we're in debates or discussions, negotiations about the service provided.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up,
so when the state enters into an agreement with a contractor and they have a contract signed, is there specific language in there that specifies that net 35 days, no interest would accrue? It's traditionally after the 30th day, additional interest expense accrues. And so I guess what I want to make sure is we're not paying additional money because we're not able to turn it around within 30 days, or we're not negotiating in our contract language that allows us that extra grace period.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that is within the state administrative rules about the 35 days. In terms of us making a payment, we make those payments within the 35 days and are not charged penalties, but I will go back and just ask the question to make sure there weren't some odd examples that the representative ought to know about.
The only thing I'd be interested in is if it's excessive. Obviously, there are situations with every project where it's going to take 120 days to get something taken care of. I'm just very curious to know if our payables are going 60 or 90 days, and as a result of that, we're having to pay additional interest that if we had a different system in place, we could be paying those within 30 days and saving that money.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we do have a maturation process where we track the maturity of each one of those payables and record how many are done within the 35 days, 60 days, 90 days to be able to keep track of that kind of thing. And then we manage the exceptions about the ones that are going longer, about what's going on with that, what the negotiation is, and what's happening with that. So I think I can commit that there's not an issue around us paying penalties, but I do want to confirm that there aren't some examples that the representative ought to know about, and I'll do that.
Okay, are there further questions? Senator Yee, and then Representative.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at this measure of maintenance because I asked a question. What is the definition of targeted condition of the maintenance project? And the answer I got was, I think I got a book showing, what is it, 17 or 23 different types of maintenance, if the chair recall, and then show different conditions of A, B, C, D, E. But then when we got a written answer, it was a completely different answer. We got an answer about customer satisfaction based on a survey they took. So my question is, why do they give us completely different questions, different answers to one question that asks for definition of targeted condition of maintenance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, there were three different areas of discussion, as I recall. One was pavement condition, which was talking about 78% fair or better done on an analysis of the pavement. Another was the customer satisfaction surveys within maintenance that show on the basis of the survey that if Senator Yee has seen it yet, it's in Attachment A of the packet for today. Those surveys are filled out by citizens who indicate their degree of satisfaction with maintenance of the roadway and the shoulders, et cetera. And the third were analysis like pavement condition, which is done on the basis of viewing the maintenance of the roadway done by our folks making an evaluation of the roadway. So there are three different ways to get information. Two of those are done analytically, and one is done on the basis of public perception in order to have both customer satisfaction responses as well as the analytical response. And that's what we're trying to get at in our responses is both methods of measuring and feedback.
Follow-up. But you never mentioned anything about driver's satisfaction. All you said was there are 23 different kinds of maintenance projects, and you were showing us different conditions. And then you came back, and you only answer about driver's satisfaction. So to me, it just seems to me it's very confusing. All I ask for is a definition of targeted condition. So what is it? What is the definition of cognitive condition.
Mr. Chair, I can go back and look at the materials of what we've submitted before, but within those is a listing of how we define each one of those. The driver's piece is this attachment A. This is where driver's saying, what do I think about the condition of the roadway?
Mm-hmm.
The targeted piece is the one that deals with both our target for customer satisfaction, which is what this one is saying. Our target is 87% of the customers feeling like it's satisfactory, the roadway is satisfactory. So when these are surveys are received back, our goal is that 87% of the respondents, the citizens filling them out, are feeling satisfied with the work. Similar to Nike or a pizza parlor or anywhere else that would have a certain level of customer satisfaction that would be their target. This is a customer satisfaction target. On our actual conditions, analyzing and looking at the engineering and condition of the roadway and pavement condition, our target
does not include pavement. It's maintenance.
Right. This is maintenance. I'm just saying in the areas that we're talking about here for pavement, that condition target is 78% now. Under the condition of the roadway that we see happening over the next 2 years, we expect to be at 76% by the end of the biennium. The third area was the blue book, which I don't have with me. I think it may be on the top of the senator's pile there, which is done on the same basis as pavement condition. That's using those same kind of analytical tools to analyze the condition of the drainage and the ditch of the shoulder of the road and other areas to say, here's our expectation of where we are at this time, and here's our expectation about where we'll be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Chair and Senator Yee would like me to go back and pull out the one that deals with the specific wording about maintenance, I'd be happy to pull that out and get that back shortly.
Yes, I just want to see what is the definition of targeted condition, because your book says you're at 87%. Targeted condition. And I mean, I get two different sets of answers. At the committee time, you said the different maintenance at ABC condition, and the written answer is completely different. You said driver's satisfaction. And I also want to know what is your engineer's measurement of targeted condition, of acceptable condition. What is your a scientific analysis of measuring the different conditions of projects? We don't want to get a complicated answer that doesn't really tell us anything. I think this is a waste of time and energy if we get confusing answers and not get to what we really want to know to make good decisions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, let me give it one more shot and then I'll come back. On the 87%, that 87% is the customer satisfaction survey target. So when citizens fill out this survey and give us their answers about whether we're doing a satisfactory job or not, our target is the 87% feeling satisfied about our work.
Now, that was not the answer we got the first time I asked. It was the second time you gave it to us in writing, which is completely different, that you took about half hour's committee time to tell us about 23 different maintenance projects, and they were rated A, B, C, D, E. So we just want to get two sets of completely different answers to one very simple question. What is the definition of targeted condition?
Okay. Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, I've answered one about the customer satisfaction. And it sounds like we're past that one, and I'll go to the next one, which is targeted condition of the maintenance of the roadway. I'll go back and pull that out from the information that we have and make sure we get back to you today.
Yeah, yes, and give us a measurement engineers use to measure the condition of each maintenance project.
I'll come back with that.
Chair.
Representative Attridge.
Thank you. First, I think you should read April 2nd instead of March 12th. I correct you on your supplemental update. But second,
Mr. Chair, I just to make sure we're tracking, this is actually going back a ways. This one.
Was this all the way back?
Just that one question,
oh,
and then
thanks.
The rest move ahead.
Mike, anyway. Okay, I see.
Sorry about this.
It helps if I read. We had asked, I lost it, on page four, we'd asked about your central service budget reduction recommendation, and that stemmed from a question that I had by another member last Friday regarding Chairman Hewitt's 10%, his pledge to cut 10% out of administration or whatever his pledge was. I wasn't there, so I can't attribute it to him.
I'd be happy to say 10% out of central service.
Central service. And we've never gotten, you commented on it, but we've never gotten exactly what those recommended cuts were and a list of those cuts. And I would like to, before we continue the work session, not today, I mean, before we...
I'm happy to...
What I'd like to do is I'd like to get the recommendations as they were presented to the OTC regarding the cuts so that we can have those available as we look at the budget and prioritize, because I'd like to see what ODOT's recommended budget cuts were if they had to be 10 or 15%.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, what is listed here is what was actually given to the commission. It totals to $14.2 million. It was presented in this format as an impact to say what would happen with an additional 15% is what was requested by the chair, as I recall. And the amount that was actually taken was approximately half of that, a little less than half of that, 6.1 of additional in the new biennium. But I'm happy to get more information if the members would like. This is what was actually presented to the commission here. I cleaned up the words a little bit, took out some acronyms, that type of thing.
Okay, good. Well, because it's not clear. Because this isn't very clear to me what the cuts were. So I guess if this was presented, it was how it was presented. But
I'd be happy.
I'd like some more detail. I don't know how the Transportation Commission can make a recommendation based on this.
Well,
and obviously they chose not to do that. But I mean, but what I'm trying to get to is what it would look like under what we normally have as budgeting things, where the cuts would be. Not necessarily by line item.
Mr. Chair, maybe I can follow up with Representative Patridge after the meeting today and talk through what we could provide or other information.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay. With that, I think we can go ahead and proceed forward to the actual work session. Thank you, Mike. We have binders here, and we'll go ahead. We are short Representative Smith, but we can open up the work session, and we will close the public hearing and open up the work session on Senate Bill 5545. Susie Jordan.
Mr. Chair, as Mr. Chair indicated, there is a notebook at your place that has a front cover on it that says work session for ODOT, small notebook. And I have placed in there the materials that we will be using over the next couple of days to work through the Department of Transportation budget. I just want to familiarize you first with what's in the notebook, and then we will go to the LFO recommendations and your motions and votes. The first page is just a summary to bring you back to what the governor's recommended budget is and the revenues that make up the Department of Transportation budget, and a summary of the overall LFO recommendation, which is a slight increase, primarily due to the technical adjustments, but it's actually a 0.7% decrease from those technical adjustments that were requested by the agency. The first section is a summary material. It's between two blue sheets. It's a summary of the agency, the overall department budget, and then the second sheet is a breakdown by program area and limitation of what those amounts are. It gives the columns show the governor's recommended budget in the middle there, the technical adjustments and the LFO recommendation, and the changes in one column on the page. The worksheet behind that is the agency summary of the LFO standard worksheet that we're bringing forward in all of our work sessions. The worksheet behind that is a summary of the technical adjustments that are being made in each of the program areas in there. And then Representative Johnson had asked for some place where all of the policy packages were listed. That follows the summary.
Thank you.
And then there's a summary of the budget notes that we'll be talking about as we go through each program. So if you ever need to go back and reference it all in one place, right at the front of your book. When we turn the page, we'll start with the first program area, and what I will do is I will explain what the program area is, what each of the technical adjustments are, and then I will stop and ask for a motion, or that will be my recommendation, and then if there are policy packages in the program area, then I will move them through each policy package for a motion and a vote by the committee, and then a final. At the very end of the work session, then we will I will go through what all of the changes are in the budget bill, Senate Bill 5545, and we'll vote on that at the end, which will take into account all of the actions that you've taken by program. So we're ready to begin with the. Does anybody have any questions about that?
Yes, sir.
Representative Ringo.
Thank you. I'd like to ask a kind of a global question before we get down in the details. And in looking at the memorandum right on the very front, you say that the limited budget is increased $33 million, or 2%, which constitutes a $58 million decrease of current service level. See, right at the end of the first paragraph.
Okay, yes.
And I'm just wondering if you can explain to us why that is such a decrease from current service level. Is it because of salary roll-up? What's making that a decrease?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ringo, there are several things. That's the governor's recommended budget, first of all.
Okay.
And in the governor's recommended budget, they adjust mm-hmm. the budget for one-time costs in the prior biennium, and they also take out change the project mix of projects that will actually be built in the next biennium, and they take into account the amount of revenue that they will be anticipate receiving in that biennium. And so the reduction has to do with, one, the bond sale that's actually put back in later on in their technical adjustments. That's almost that amount of money, but there are some other smaller technical adjustments that were one-time costs that would have decreased the budget. Salaries went up. They did not go down.
Most of this is bond sales that are put back in later on through a technical adjustment.
In this particular case, that's about the same amount as the bond proceeds that we're carrying over from the last biennium into the next biennium. There are a series of adjustments that have occurred in their budget that have led to the $58 million decrease. But
okay.
It looks like it's almost the same thing. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Any more questions? Well, then, we want to start with the Board of Maritime Pilots. They're a very small, one-person operation. Their budget is the governor's recommended budget. There was $263,979. As a result of technical adjustments in rates, the budget is being reduced a total of $1,999. That is for $216 for the employer PERS assessment rate reduction, $1,516 for the attorney general rate reduction, and $267 for the reduction in the rate for telephone long distance charges.
For a total budget of $261,980, one full-time equivalent position.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I also recommend approval of those technical adjustments and the total expenditure limitation you just noted.
Okay. Well, Legislative Fiscal Office recommends $261,980 and one full-time equivalent position. Is there any discussion? Any objection to that? Senator Yee is recognized.
They were going to give us some performance measures. Did they give us any performance measures about any accidents they have or?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, they did not bring back any information. This agency doesn't track performance measures. It's a one-person office, and she doesn't have time to put information together and do her job. And so they, the board doesn't require her to track data and information that way.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, when will the budget go to the full committee?
As soon as we've passed everything and have the fee bill passed, Senator Yee, and I'm going to guess we'll work up to the point of the fee bill. I would like to go ahead, as Legislative Fiscal has recommended, and go ahead with a piece by piece, and rather, I guess we call it piecemeal approval of the underlying pieces of the budget until we get at least to the DMV fee bill, and then hold at that particular point until that bill comes to us and we have an opportunity to hear that bill separately.
Since we are asking performance measures from all the departments, I mean the agencies that come before us, is there time for them to give us their performance measures, such as how many accidents they have, or how safe they are, and the historical data of their minority members, because they are people who are concerned that this board does not involve minority pilots and what their goals are for the future. Is there time for us to ask for that information?
Well, I think there's certainly time for it. Susie, do you have any comments that you'd like to make there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we can ask for the information on what kinds of data that they do have. As I said, the agency does not, they don't have performance measures. There may be some workload data that they may be able to bring forward, but they do not have a performance measure.
Mm-hmm. I think what we are asking is historical data of their accidents and what their goal is in the future for the next 2 years and their minority member participation.
If
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Senator Yee is making a case, and I hope she is, that we maybe take this piece out of order and delay it until the end of our work session agenda, I would support that completely. I think at a minimum, some kind of indication on the minority, and I know that included in that minority were women for a long time, and I think that it's completely appropriate to ask the board to at least give us an indication of what their commission plan along those lines is. And I'd like that very much to have it in writing.
I think that's probably appropriate. I know that we had some response to it just briefly on record, but I don't think that there was anything that we received that was written that was a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
So if the consensus of the committee is that we go ahead and pull the Board of Marine Pilots, Maritime Pilots, out of its current order and move it to a later time in the discussion so that we can request, and we have enough folks in the agency here that they'll be able to move forward on that, we'll just go ahead and take the Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation under advisement for the Board of Maritime Pilots and come back to it. Perhaps Mike will follow up with the director of the Maritime Pilots Group.
Okay, then Mr. Chair, we'll move on to the Public Transit Division. Public Transit Governor's recommended budget was for a total of $36,484,212.13.04 FTE. The governor's budget is a reduction of $921,002 or $09 in general fund for the Senior Disabled Transit Program. LFO is recommending several technical adjustments. The technical adjustment of $2,858 for the employer PERS assessment, an adjustment in the Attorney General rate of $1,359, and a reduction in the rate for telephone long-distance charges of $3,126. ELFO is also recommending that we align this budget with estimated actual expenditure patterns. Reduction should be taken in travel, office expense, employee training, publicity, and publications, employee recruitment, and dues and subscriptions and direct program limitations that don't affect the direct program of $4,986. And the request to shift federal as other to federal funds, because surface transportation federal funds do not pass through the highway funds and are not received as other funds, to change that $10 million to a federal fund limitation from other funds. And to carry forward $8,500,000 in federal funds for buses that have been ordered but that will not be delivered until the next biennium and paid for in the next biennium. And then finally, to correct the funding source on a position from other funds to federal funds. Total of technical adjustments then is $8,487,671. You will go to the spreadsheet that is behind the public transit budget and turn to page 3. The current service level budget reflects all of those technical adjustments, and you'd be voting on a current service level funding of $45,895,499 with those technical adjustments.
And 13.04 is it full-time equivalency?
At current service level, yes. And then, yep. I'll go through the policy package.
President Johnson?
I have a couple of questions. One, is it appropriate in the work session, if a question comes up, to ask the agency people that are still?
Yes, if it is something that hasn't been previously explained, discussing it amongst ourselves and then asking for further clarification is appropriate.
Okay. May I?
Yes. Who is it that you'd like to call?
Martin, a question about transit. And during the time that I was involved in managing a piece of ODOT, there was a central assessment that was being assessed against all of the constituent parts of ODOT. Does transit pay that central assessment? And where is it in the budget?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, yes.
For the record?
Sorry, for the record, my name is Martin Loring, manager of ODOT's Public Transit Division. The amount we paid in the current budgeted for the 0103 biennium is in the neighborhood of a couple hundred thousand dollars. It was carried in prior biennia as a revenue transfer, and that caused difficulty for us. In our request, the budget was reconfigured so that it's carried. Most of our funds are federal funds. We spend the money and then seek reimbursement. We have to have a transaction. And that was changed so that we actually have limitation and can track that. It's part of the services and supplies. It's allocated across our federal programs and our state programs and general fund programs.
So is the assessment for constituent parts of the Department of Transportation still done on a per-employee basis?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I believe that is the basis on which those charges are accumulated. Mike has more detailed information on
that. Is that the case, Mike?
Most of them are that way.
Okay. That raises now another question. Most of them are that way, and I want to find out what ones aren't. And, Martin, I still want to come back and find out. Still find out, you're carrying your assessment in services and supplies. Are you actually, is cash changing hands?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, yes.
Okay. But that wasn't always the case.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, no, I don't believe that it was. For the 2 years I've been here, that is how it's been handled.
Okay, and based on your 13.04 FTE, based on my now three-year-old information, you're probably paying somewhere in the area of 275, something like that. I mean, that was the, I had 13 employees at Arrow, and that's about what we were paying.
Butler, Representative Johnson, it's in that neighborhood. I think that's a little bit high, but I won't quibble for a couple of dollars. We could pull the exact amount out. It is in the budget. I don't have that number at my fingertips, but it is in that neighborhood.
Well, the main point that I was trying to get to was I didn't know whether or not that...
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, the number is $171,000.
Congratulations, Mr. Marsh. The assessment's gone down. Ms. Manford. My main curiosity was that is a real cost of you doing business, for lack of a better way to identify it, and that for a long time that was being carried, and transit wasn't contributing, but now it appears that that's been rectified and you actually are paying actual cash in your assessment the same way the other constituent.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, that has been my experience for the 2 years I worked for the department.
Thanks.
No one likes paying bills, but we get value for that service.
Great. Okay.
Representative Ringo?
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if somebody could refresh my recollection as to what the buses were about, the $88,000,000. That's public transit buses on order, but not...
Mr. Chair, Representative Ringo, with the $10 million, or the $9 million that public transit was given by the legislature in the last session, they were able to secure additional federal funding to replace buses in local jurisdictions. And those buses have been ordered. Some of them have been delivered and paid for. Some of them are, you know, because they're special order buses, they have not been put all of their features on them, and they're not ready to be delivered yet and won't be by the end of the biennium, so they will have to be paid for in the next biennium. Is that right?
Is that satisfactory, Representative Johnson's recognized?
That's a perfect segue into another question that I have that I might offer as a potential budget note if the chair would allow. I want to start out anything that I have to say by complimenting ODOT on how responsive they have been to an issue that I've raised in Columbia County. They have been nothing but helpful and responsive and imaginative in helping to think up solutions. So against that backdrop. The case in Columbia County may be illustrative of a problem wherein I'm not sure that there is adequate auditing oversight of money that goes to local jurisdictions for the purchase of buses. And it concerns me that there is even a remote possibility that capital expenditure money is being used to fund operations. And I guess I would almost rather explore with Mr. Loring what a solution is to assure that there's adequate oversight to make sure that, particularly where the county has contracted out the performance of some of the public transit services to a 501c3 not-for-profit, that there are sufficient rigors in the accounting process to make sure that that money is being spent where it should be. And I'm willing to explore how to make that happen. I just think Columbia County is illustrative of a potential very serious problem.
You heard on the record, Mr. Chair, Mike Marsh from ODOT. Martin and I would like to talk about it a few minutes if we could, and happy to look at what kind of wording you'd be looking for. It sounds like you're interested in making sure that the monies are going for what they're intended to go for.
I actually, to ask that the department provide a report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee detailing the Public Transit Division's efforts in auditing or assuring that federal grant program relating to purchasing capital equipment is expended in the local transit district for the purpose it was intended. And it might not just be federal. I might be showing my misunderstanding of the fact that it easily could be a combination of state and federal. I'm just looking for a level of assurance that particularly in these contracting relationships where your principal relationship is with the county, and then the function is contracted out to a 501c3 that may be less accountable than local government.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, and Martin Loring, Public Transit Division. The representative has put her finger on a problem that we are in the process of trying to address. Auditing may well be part of the solution, but the solution may be more involved than that. I would hope that if you're going to direct us through a budget note, you don't pin it down to just auditing. I think we would like to address the problem by building in a better system of controls. It may involve clarifying relationships between the county and us. It may involve working with the county to deal directly with our 501c3s so they are a party to an agreement, and we can clearly set out mutual expectations, reporting requirements. There is a real problem that we think that we need to address to become even better stewards of public funds, whether they're federal or state. And we're actively engaged in that issue. If you believe it would be helpful to help guide us in this, we would welcome that guidance, but it ought to be broader than just auditing.
Representative Johnson?
So I have to ask you a question.
Having never done this before, I don't know how to proceed at this point. Initially, I believe that the tool available was a draft budget note. It appears that the agency may have a suggestion to try to improve on the direction that I'm heading, and I don't know what to do at this point.
Well, let's take counsel from Legislative Fiscal Office in that regard.
What is the improvement that the agency is suggesting?
Chair Butler, Administrator Jordan, we are engaged a technical advisory committee to look at the administrative rules for the primary state funding program that is involved, and this issue area of the relationship between the state grantees and subgrantees is one of the areas in which we're exploring changes in our administrative rules and changes in our practice. It has to be done collaboratively. It's not something the state can force on governing bodies, in this case Columbia County, because the statute under which we work clearly puts the governing body, in this case the county board of commissioners, in the driver's seat. But we would like to create an option under rule that gives them the option of engaging us more directly, if that makes sense, to ensure accountability. And if they're not willing to do that, then we'll ensure by monitoring the county that they, in fact, directly deal with the issues better than was the case in the example the representative raised.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the budget note that you were suggesting was an internal audit that the agency would perform and report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. I don't see any reason why the agency couldn't move forward with their plans to engage a technical advisory committee to look at that and make that report on the results of the technical advisory committee's actions to the audit committee as a part of that, or as that unfolds, and we can modify the language to make sure that is...
That seems to speak to Mr. Loring's concerns, that we not just ask you to audit an area where you already know there's a problem. I'd much rather hear about the solution, and it seems as though we're headed in a more solution-oriented way by saying that we'd get the report of your technical advisory committee. It is my hope that this technical advisory committee that you're convening is not only looking at the chain of custody of the funds, because that seems fairly obvious on its face. You get the money, did you buy a bus, and did you spend the money how you should, and is the bus still parked out there? I would like to reach into the question of, to what degree are you able to give subcontractees guidance about the kinds of buses they need, the number of buses that they need? I at least get the impression that for some of the subcontractees, it is a hunt for funds to turn into buses, and that somehow the measure of their program is the amount of rolling stock they have. not whether or not their schedule is appropriate, whether or not the buses are appropriate to the kind of clientele that they're serving. I worry that some of the subcontractees are so without technical assistance that they end up spending precious public money on equipment that isn't maintained adequately, and perhaps is not suited to the mission. And I don't know whether that comes within the purview of your technical committee to address those sorts of questions, as well as the applicability of the funds.
Chair Butler, Representative Don
or application.
Johnson. Yes, yes, it does. I mean, at least within my broad concept of our stewardship responsibility, that we want to maximize the amount of the need we can meet for transportation services benefiting the elderly and disabled in Columbia County and every other county within the state.
So that somehow there's some technical guidance in Columbia County. I'm not saying they're doing this. I'm just picking them as an example. But the 501c3 subcontractee ends up buying a 48-person bus when really their service market would only indicate that they'd have 6 passengers tops on a particular run. I don't know who makes the decision about whether or not they're buying the 48-person bus or the 6-person bus that's more appropriate to their service area, but it seems to me, watching the performance of some of those local boards, that they're very good-hearted people that need technical assistance to be able to do right. So I guess, Mr. Chair, I am looking for a budget note, if that's acceptable to you, and I can convince my colleagues that that's a good thing to have there.
The budget note that we presently have, as I present am reading that, and Ms. Jordan has taken some additional notes on that, is relative to the joint report provided before to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, detailing the Public Transit Division's efforts in auditing and assuring the federal grant program relating to purchasing capital equipment is expended in the local transit district for purposes intended, and then reporting it, and the language, as I understand it, would also engage technical advisory committee to seek solutions to it, not just to identify the problems, but to offer those solutions. And I think that pending approval by the co-chairs, that language can certainly be amplified because it gets more to the heart of the solution rather than just identify the problem.
Is that acceptable to you, Mr. Loring? Are we headed in the right direction to try to solve the problem here?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'll wordsmith it for you and bring it back tomorrow.
I'm getting better than that. Thank you.
With approval from the co-chair.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we're back to the Public Transit Division's approval of the technical adjustments for our current service level budget.
Mr. Chair,
Senator, you
I also will have a question. The Public Transit gave us their performance measures of about, 3.8 rides per person in 1996, and it stayed pretty flat for 4 years, and then it goes a little bit to 5.5 per capita in 01, and they want to reach 7 rides per person by 02. I haven't seen a strategy how they plan to increase the rides per person from 4 to 7 in 2 years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the increase is a direct result of the additional money that the legislature has appropriated for the public transit program. So there will be more buses available to serve more people, and that's why they expect the increase in ridership.
But they have been receiving increase in funds from 96 to 2000. But the rides per person has remained pretty flat.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, they haven't received enough money to make a difference in the amount of equipment and operating services that they can provide in the local jurisdictions to make an increase or an impact.
So do they have a plan for us regarding how many rides per person for each year of the next 2 years? I mean, just by increasing funds, you can increase the ridership? And how about the rural areas and the gap services? I mean, for disabled and seniors, all from door to the bus stop and in the smaller areas, are you going to be able to provide services?
Chair Butler, Senator Yee, yes. We're going to provide services in all 36 counties of the state. The projection that you see, and correctly point out, rising to 7 rides per capita by the end of the biennium, reflects, as Ms. Jordan indicated, the expected result of the new vehicles purchased with the grant assistance the legislature graciously provided us in the 99th session. A portion of that $19 million in new resources, which was in fact the first increase in funding since 91, was used to approve grants for the purchase of some 257 new vehicles. Now, a good number of those vehicles are reflected in that $8.5 million of funds that need to be carried over, because although the vehicles have been ordered, in many cases they haven't yet been delivered or paid for. But in each of those grant applications, there were some 300 grant applications that were processed, recommended by local advisory committees, reviewed and approved by governing bodies, taken to the Area Commissions on Transportation, and finally approved. Each of those specific grant applications for one, two, or more vehicles specifically projected how many rides that local provider would deliver with the new vehicle in place. And the projected effect that we're going to have, that translates into 7 rides per capita, is a summation of all those estimates made for the individual vehicles that these transportation providers requested and received grant funds to buy. So I wouldn't glorify it by calling it a plan, but it's a logical development of service based on new investment that you allowed us to make and the expected outcome of that investment. At the same time, we're working to improve efficiency so that what they projected to occur turns out to actually be a floor, not a cap, that we'll actually do better by improving coordination and making the service more effective.
And what about the rural areas and the gap services that we heard from testimony that are not provided?
The Chair Butler, Senator Yee, if I'm not sure which specific services you have in mind, but the 257 vehicles will be delivered to providers serving every one of Oregon's 36 counties, some in remote areas, some in urban areas. And one of the considerations in approving a particular grant over another was a commitment to serve people who are not now being served or who are underserved. So the expectation is that service will improve. All needs will not be met, but we will be able to meet a lot more of the needs of our elderly and disabled residents for service than we currently do. And a lot of the people receiving service with the new vehicles are in the situation that you describe.
Another question.
Follow up, Cindy.
So will this 300 applications, will that go to the small providers as well as the large providers? Because it seems to me that the small providers are a lot more innovative and a lot more prepared to take care of the special populations. So what do you anticipate the percentage of the funding going to small providers and large providers?
Chair Butler, Senator Yee, The material that was, the written material that was provided in response to the question in this area had a list of every single project, every single grantee receiving assistance through this program by county, by ODOT administrative region, and then overall. I do not recall the percentage breakdown by small and large provider, but if we can agree on what that definition is, it would be easier for us to analyze the data that have already been provided and tell you what percent of the money or what percent of the vehicles are going to providers under a certain size, whatever that threshold, you know, between small and large might happen to be. If the committee would like that information, we could easily do that analysis and provide it quickly.
Yes, I would appreciate knowing the percentage of funding going to small providers and what do you anticipate the next biennium would be. Would that be an increase in funding to the small providers? And I would like to hear a progress report on how the ridership has improved and how it has improved in the rural areas and for the special population, the elderly and the disabled. Could we ask for a progress report in a year?
In the interim?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, may I make a suggestion?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Senator Yee has a keen interest in performance measures in all of these program areas. And in order to move through the program parts of the budget, I'd like to suggest maybe that Senator Yee meet with Mike Marsh and identify each of the information needs that you have on performance measures, and we can deal with those then at the end so that we can move this budget. The co-chairs have a need to have this budget taken as far as we can by Friday, and at this rate, we won't be very far. So we could
take it aside. How much time do we have to work on performance measures? Because right now my time is pretty crunch.
I don't have you on that many subcommittees or ad hoc committees, Senator.
So, I mean, how much time do we have in getting performance measures ready for ODOT?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, ODOT has presented their performance measures and what it is that they are tracking and have provided additional information as questions have come up. So, if we want to make additional changes in their performance measures, we're going to have to do some work outside of subcommittee to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I basically am interested in getting a percentage of funding going to small providers, going to rural areas, and for special the elderly and the disabled population. So if they can provide that and what their goals are for the next 2 years, I think I'll be satisfied with this division.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. At that point, recommendation, when do you think you could have that back to us, Mr. Loring? What is that something that you would be prepared to respond to tomorrow, perhaps?
Chair Butler, yes.
Okay. With that, why don't we go ahead and we do have the recommendation. We could still go ahead and move the budget pending that information, and then we can comment on the quality of the information or the quality of the outcomes, measurements based upon that.
Yes, but would they be able to make a progress report during the
interim? In the interim?
Mm-hmm. How they do on their performance?
We don't have that currently as a budget note, Senator Yee. However, there will be other progress reports. If I understand some of the other budget notes, the effect of those budget notes is that there will be more interim reports to various committees, including the emergency board, detailing various outcomes of certain other issues. Mm-hmm. And we may be able to also ask for the comparative information relative to the outcome on the progress on performance measurements that they've provided to us.
Yes.
And we can go ahead and perhaps insert that measurement progress towards measurement performance and see if the co-chairs would agree to that.
Mm-hmm. How they are meeting their goals.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With that, Legislative Fiscal Office has made a recommendation relative to the public transit division of a total adjusted amount of $45,895,499 with 13.04 full-time equivalencies.
Current service level.
CSL. Is there any objection to the approving the current service level for this division? Seeing none, recognizing a quorum, we'll so order and move forward then with the packages.
The governor's recommended packages, there's a program reduction of $921,009 in the senior disabled transit program. This is general fund money that is redirected to other programs. LFO is recommending approval of that package.
Okay.
With the statement of expectation that's noted below, that with that level of funding, the committee expects public transit to continue current services to the senior disabled transportation operating support through the formula program, and that the reduction in general funds would be directed to a reduction in the number of new vehicles purchased, and that every effort would be made to maximize the number of vehicles replaced during the biennium through competitive bids, combined purchases, bulk purchasing for local jurisdictions.
Representative Patridge moves the removal of the package in accordance with the Legislative Fiscal Revenue or Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation and the budget note with explanation, statement of explanation. Are there any objections? Seeing none, noting none, noting a quorum present, we'll so order that motion.
And as a result of reduction in the central services budget, there is a reduction in the agency's assessment from central services of $2,499 that is being reallocated to bridge and preservation, and I recommend approval.
Okay, and you want to go ahead with 475 at the same time?
475 is a similar situation. The central services division has a package in there to swap positions swap consultant services for positions, and it saves the agency several thousand dollars, and the share that the public transit division would have paid for that was $108, a result in $108 reduction, and I recommend approval.
Legislative Fiscal Office and recommends, Representative Patridge recommends we approve the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal Office as to modifications relative to package 147 and 495, which result in reductions.
That's 475.
475.
475, I beg your pardon. 147 and 475. Any objection? Noting none and the quorum present. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, just a procedural question.
Representative Johnson.
Where it's reallocated, was that an agency recommendation? Like reallocated to bridge,
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, that package was a recommendation of the agency and the governor's recommended budget.
Okay, correct.
So approval of those recommended technical adjustments and the policy packages results in a total public transit division budget of $44,971,883 total sum and 13.04 FTE, and I recommend approval of it.
Representative Patridge now moves the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation of for the Public Transit Division, total funds budget of $44,971,883, 13.04 FTE. Any objection? Noting a no objection and a quorum present, so ordered. We'll proceed on, let's see, how far can we get into the rail division?
Do rail.
Do rail? Okay.
5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The rail division.
We do it tomorrow.
We can do rail in 5 minutes. Rail is easier.
Okay, the rail. The governor's recommended budget for the rail
station, Albany station in?
Is $31,930,766.13 FTE. The LFO recommended total budget is $39,715,591. There are several technical adjustments as with previous budgets. The employer PERS assessment of a total of $5,734. The attorney general rate reduction results in a total of $5,467 reduction. Telephone long distance is a reduction of $7,246. Realigning the budget, I don't know what all those little numbers are there, but aligning the budget with estimated actual expenditure patterns was a reduction of 9,528 other funds. And then the technical adjustment requested by the agency to carry forward expenditure limitations to accommodate contract payments for rail station improvements at Eugene and Albany, that is $7,812,800. And LFO's technical adjustments then result in a total current service level budget of $40,139,031.
And 20.07 current service level. Are there any objections to the legislative fiscal office's recommendation of 40,139,031 with 20.07 full-time equivalency on the rail division? Noting none, Senator Yee?
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to the budget, although I'm concerned about the subsidy of $51 per passenger the state pays on the subsidy. On top of that, we have nothing to say about a better schedule for the passengers in Oregon. I mean, it's not user-friendly, and we have nothing to say about increasing the passenger fee.
For an Amtrak issue.
Yeah, for the Amtrak issue. So I still would like to see the rail division work with California and Washington to make the schedule more convenient for the commuters. Portland riders cannot take a morning train to come to work in Salem and go back by train.
Have
to go back by bus. So I still would like to see the rail work with the state to make it more user-friendly. But, and I still would like to see we increase a dollar or two in passenger fees. And I understand we have no control over the passenger
fees. Over the Amtrak rates.
Yes.
I think they've made that clear. Yeah.
Is there any way we can say we want them to work harder in making the commuter schedule more user-friendly?
Mr. Chair, we could probably put in a statement of expectation that the agency will continue to work with our neighboring states on schedules and as they do now.
Or we pull out.
Don't let it run through Oregon.
Don't need an Albany station.
Let's take the Albany states out, Mr. Chair.
No, we keep the Albany.
They're not stopping in Oregon anyway. I mean, okay.
So we need half the money because it's not coming in the afternoon, only in the morning.
Yeah, right.
No, I mean, we have nothing to say, and we keep giving them money and keep suffering.
I think we should hold this division till the last, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee.
Don't you agree that we have nothing to say and we keep paying?
Just for purposes of a discussion, I don't agree that the subsidy is a bad thing. I mean, these people are traveling in a way that's not burdening our roads, and mass transit has all kinds of benefits. And I think, I mean, that's a larger discussion. So anyway, I don't have heartburn with that, just to fill that out of the table.
Yeah, but if the commuter train schedule is better, we can increase ridership. And when we increase ridership, we will reduce the subsidy.
I completely agree with the scheduling.
And the statement of expectation to work with the Amtrak for the rail division, I think, is something we can do. and that, that would be a statement of expectation for the rail division. So with that, are there any objections to the legislative fiscal recommendation for the CSL? Seeing none and recognizing a full quorum, we'll go ahead and order CSL.
Mr. Chair, then we move to the policy packages. The first package is a program reduction of $921,009, and I recommend approval in general fund.
Okay, the recommendation is a reduction of $921,009 in general fund, package 090. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Package 147 as a reallocation to bridge and reservation. That's the reduction. 148
or 147?
It's 147 and 148.
Okay, all right.
$5,108 reduction in other funds, and I recommend approval.
Okay. Legislative Fiscal Office recommends, Representative Patrick moves approval of package 148, reduction of 5108. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Package 431 is the addition of three positions, 2.25, in the Oregon Passenger Rail Program. The agency is realigning their services and supplies dollars to personal services to pay for the positions, and I recommend approval.
Representative Patrick moves recommendation relative to 431, total of 2.25 FTE, three positions. Any objections? Discussion? So ordered.
Package 433 is two positions for rail transit safety oversight at a cost of $298,006, and I recommend approval.
Representative Patrick moves on 433, legislative fiscal office's recommendation, and $298,006 and other funds. Any objections? Approved. Recognizing one short of a full complement.
Package 434 has an increase in one position for the grade crossing safety protection program at a cost of $138,949 other funds, and I recommend approval.
Representative Patridge moves approval of legislative revenue office's recommendations of package 434 of a total of $138,949 other funds. Are there any objections? Recognizing a full quorum, with the exception of one person, will approve that.
Package 435 is the agency is proposing adding one office specialist and $65,942 other fund expenditure limitation for clerical support in the rail division. They currently have one position supporting a staff of 20, and I recommend approval.
Representative Patridge moves approval of 435, legislative fiscal office recommendation, $65,942. Any objection? Approve that, recognizing Representative Smith still out of the room.
And package 476 is the information systems efficiency package. The result in this budget is a $220 saving in central service assessment.
Representative Patridge recommends 476, based upon the fiscal office's recommendation of $220 reduction, all funds. Any objections? So ordered.
The approval of the recommended adjustments results in a total rail division budget of $39,715,591 funds and 26.07 FTE.
Representative Patridge moves legislative fiscal offices for recommendation for the rail division of a total of $39,715,591, 26.07 FTE. Any objection?
What is the prevailing measure of the rail division?
Chair, they presented that. Mr. Chair, they presented that during their budget presentation. Look. Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, they had four performance measures that they presented. One was the grade crossing incidents, number of grade crossing incidents, the railroad employee accidents and incidents related to their defective walkways, derailment causes related to equipment and railroad derailment causes related to track, and number of passengers on the Oregon passenger rail system.
Mm-hmm. They have their goals for the next 2 years?
I think they gave us some additional follow-up information in addition to this, which may have contained the goals. I don't recall whether
Mr. Chair, it's in one of those salmon-colored packets.
Okay, as long as they include the goals, then we can keep track of it.
Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, recognizing only Representative Smith absent from the group, we'll go ahead and move that, and then that will...
Mr. Chair, you might want to do light rail debt service. It's very easy. It's an obligation that we have. It's
$19,994,850.
Not yet. And I recommend approval of payment of our debt service.
Representative Patrick recommend or moves the recommendation. Legislative Fiscal Office relative to the light rail debt service. Any objection? Noting none, so ordered.
Okay, tomorrow then we'll start with motor carrier transportation.
It's an overachiever, Mr. Chair.
I don't have time to do this.
With the exception of the